This is Age of Treason Radio.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why. For there were many things I didn't know.
On the White Network. With your host, Tan Stoffel.
Welcome. The title of this installment is Discrimination and Exclusion. Last time I talked about guilt and pride, and I have a few more thoughts on that subject, and they're related to this subject too. Generally speaking, any group is stronger when it can identify and organize in its own defense and for its own interests. Group-based pride reinforces its identity. It inspires individuals to defend their interests as a group. Group-based guilt undermines identity. It demoralizes individuals and causes them to try and distance themselves from their group. But this is true of groups in general, but it's especially true, and my concern is with white group identity. Whites racked with guilt are less able to feel pride, whereas whites who feel pride can more easily shrug off guilt. In this light, guilt tripping should be seen as an attack on white identity, and thus an attack on whites as a group. Non-whites understand race better than whites do, and this is why they are so keen on any sign of white pride or white identity, and why they fight it tooth and nail. The idea of whites organizing for our own interests really and truly frightens them. Whereas, in contrast, the idea of them organizing for their own interests doesn't frighten whites enough. It comes down to us versus them, them versus us. And behind the dishonest rhetoric of cultural Marxism and identity politics, the universalist-sounding generalizations about oppressors and oppressed and majorities and marginalized minorities, what's really there, what you actually find when you read it closely, when you pay attention, with your eyes wide open to what's being said, it's undeniably anti-white. I've made that point before in my previous installments, citing the cultural Marxist identity politics writing, and I'm going to make some more in this installment. But the main point is that they divide the human race into two classes, white and non-white. And the people most oblivious to all of this are whites. Whites are the ones who think that instead the goal is equality and fairness. And under this mistaken impression, have mostly abandoned their racial identity and their racial interests, pursuing their racial interests. But as important as guilt and pride are in this, in all of this that I'm talking about, discrimination and exclusion are even more critical, I think, to group identity and integrity. Discrimination is really nothing more than asking, who is us? Which I've, as I've said before, is the root of nationalism and group identity in general. And exclusion is simply the act of separating them from us. So discrimination and exclusion really can be found in any group identity and all over identity politics. It's really only whites that those things are considered bad for. This is important too. I've previously discussed in other installments concerning morality, when good and bad come up, when the idea of what's right and wrong and what's good and bad, whites do a bad job there, because we tend to have universalist notions of morality. We think everyone is us, and we mistakenly think that if something is morally bad, then it's morally bad for everyone. And this includes discrimination and exclusion, which we've been told, we've been lectured, discrimination and exclusion are bad. And we make the mistake of assuming that means it's bad for everyone. And it isn't. It isn't bad really for anyone. But to hear how it's taught in school today and how it's presented in the media today and in politics today, it's only whites that it's supposedly bad to discriminate or exclude. And I was triggered to notice this by a story that I mentioned and cited in the last installment concerning the formation of the white student union at Towson University, and ran into an article since then that covered the case in the general media outside of Towson University's posts or paper, which I had cited previously. And I thought it was interesting because it concluded with exactly this point about discrimination and exclusion. The article finished with, "Right now, no application is on file with the university to start the white student union. If it is discriminatory, it will not be approved." Quote, "If inclusiveness is not in the plan, then it will not be recognized by the Student Government Association," unquote. Dr. Terry Hall, Vice President of Student Affairs at Towson University, said. From the photos, when I looked up Terry Hall, I could see that she was, she appears to be at least, an obese white woman. And this is what we get with whites supposedly in the driver's seat in university administration. We get a person who dictates that the white student union must include everyone or it won't be permitted. So that's what launched me into this exploration of discrimination and exclusion. And, of course, I found the same thing here that I found when I examined group identity and identity politics, a double standard. So and I can't say I was surprised by it. But let me say that, first of all, these two words, discrimination and exclusion, have original meanings that they represent perfectly normal and natural concepts. But, of course, today they've taken on these extremely negative political and racial meanings. And those meanings have actually become the more common meanings of the two words. Dictionary.com describes discrimination as being treatment or consideration of or making a distinction in favor of or against a person or thing based on the group, class, or category to which that person or thing belongs, rather than on individual merit, racial and religious intolerance and discrimination. But the positive meaning is still there. That's the negative, more recent meaning that's been assigned to that word. The positive meaning is still there, and that's quoted as the power of making fine distinctions. And that's reflected also in the synonyms that are listed for that sense of the word. The synonyms are discernment, taste, acumen, perception. And these are all characteristically good, desirable qualities. And I think this is an interesting insight. Wikipedia has an entry for discrimination, and they focus entirely on the racial discrimination sense of the word. Here's an interesting paragraph. Since having to do with where this meaning of the word traces back to. "Since the American Civil War, the term discrimination generally evolved in American English usage as an understanding of prejudicial treatment of an individual based solely on their race, later generalized as membership in a certain socially undesirable group or social category. Discrimination derives from Latin, where the verb discriminare means to separate, to distinguish, to make a distinction." I'll note there that discrimination at the time was still considered good. It actually arose from the positive sense of that word as being based on discernment, taste, acumen, perception. That the people of the day perceive a difference between themselves and others and saw themselves as better. This is only considered bad in retrospect from Wikipedia's contemporary point of view. The pro-Jewish, anti-white, and pro-people of color, anti-white point of view. That article goes on to cite what discrimination has come to mean. And one of the examples that they provide is how the criminal justice system in some Western countries, there are more minorities convicted and put in prison. And I have several paragraphs here of the actual statistics, and it's actually quite alarming. Based on their small percentage of the population, they're 5, 10, 15 times overrepresented in committing crimes and being convicted of crimes. But true to form, of course, this is a perfect example of discrimination against whites, because it's described the presumption and the implication in citing this as an example of modern day discrimination is that it's implying that whites are somehow at fault and that we've somehow sneakily managed to put these non-whites in prison somehow. And it doesn't credit whites for being more law-abiding, which is something that you could take away from these statistics. And it doesn't fault the non-whites for being more prone to violence and crime. Moving on to exclusion now. Exclusion is defined by dictionary.com as to shut or keep out, to prevent the entrance of, or to shut out from consideration or privilege. Wikipedia doesn't have a dedicated article just on exclusion, but they do have one on social exclusion, which is what the negative sense of that word is today. Social exclusion relates to the alienation or disenfranchisement of certain people within a society. It is often connected to a person's social class, educational status, relationships in childhood, and living standards, and how these might affect access to various opportunities. It also applies to some degree to people with a disability, to minority, of all sexual orientations and gender identities, the LGBT community in parentheses, to the elderly and to youth exclusion in parentheses. Anyone who deviates in any perceived way from the norm of a population may become subject to coarse or subtle forms of social exclusion. There's a paragraph a bit further down saying, today, various communities continue to be marginalized from society due to the development of practices, policies, and programs that, quote, met the demands of white people and not the needs of the marginalized groups themselves, according to this fellow Yi. Yi also connects marginalization to minority communities when describing the concept of whiteness as maintaining and enforcing dominant norms and discourse. So we see here, if you read closely and you read far enough, you find out that underneath all of this stuff is an anti-white narrative, faulting whites specifically for being discriminatory and excluding others. The key here, of course, is to notice the term marginalized groups. That's straight out of identity politics terminology. As with the word racism, discrimination and exclusion are understood to describe white phenomena. They're understood as specifically white crimes, white sins, ways in which whites express their quote-unquote racism and quote-unquote hate toward non-whites. So to move now into more detail of this article that I cited here, the conclusion of, I think it's instructive here to review some more snippets taken from it and to relate it back to some of the things I talked about last week. Early on in the article, they quote a black student at the university, and he says, we had to congregate together because we weren't allowed to congregate with whites. There is a difference between a white student union and a black student union based on the history of America. And I want to point out here that this fellow discriminates between black and white. He can see a difference between black and white. In his mind, black is good and right, and white is bad and wrong. His grievance is that they excluded us. They wouldn't allow us to congregate with them. And how times have changed. The argument now is that Towson University is that whites shouldn't be allowed to congregate even with whites. That's how much things have changed. This idea here that whites are not equivalent to blacks and that there's a difference between whiteness and blackness came up in the last installment where I cited a commenter on an article about Heimbach that said to say if blacks can have it, whites should have it too, is a word trick. Do not fall for it. Blackness and whiteness are not symmetrical definitions. Blackness is defined by possession of black ancestry. Whiteness, on the other hand, is defined not by possession of white ancestry, but by non-possession of non-white ancestry. Someone like Barack Obama, for example, who has one black parent and one white parent, would be welcome in a black student union, but would be unwelcome in the white student union. This shows that a white student union is, and this is all caps, by the very definition of whiteness, more racist than a black student union. Yes, I am anti-white because whiteness is a racist construct. If these people really wanted fairness, they should form a student union that welcomes anyone with any quantity of white ancestry, regardless of what other ancestry they may have. Only then would such a student union be equivalent to a black student union that welcomes anyone with any quantity of black ancestry. Think about it. Well, I have thought about this quite a bit, and what I think about it is here's another guy who discriminates between black and white and says that or presumes that black is good and right and white is bad and wrong. He's actually saying something that sounds kind of nonsensical. Whiteness is non-non-whiteness. Whites are not non-white, basically. And he sees a problem with that. That's something we need to think about. Whereas he defines blackness in a positive sense as possessing black ancestry. Of course, he's excluding from blackness anybody who doesn't have black ancestry. And he thinks somehow this is some earth-shattering distinction between white and black. All I can see about it is that he's trying to fault whites for being more discriminating in the good sense of that word, as far as having discernment, more discernment and more taste, being more exclusive than blacks are. And, you know, he just writes all in caps, as I easily could, that by the very definition of racist, that that's what makes whiteness more racist, is simply being more discerning, more tasteful, more exclusive. I mean, what's wrong really with being more exclusive? Usually that's considered a good trait. And it's only when it comes to whites being more exclusive that it's considered something bad. It also is related to the other example that I had quoted last week, philosopher David Ingram, who argues that affirming black pride is not the equivalent to affirming white pride, since the former, unlike the latter, is a defensive strategy aimed at rectifying a negative stereotype. By contrast, affirmations of white privilege, however, thinly cloaked as affirmations of ethnic pride, serve to mask and perpetuate white privilege. So again, here's another guy who discriminates between black and white. He sees a difference, thinks black is good and right, white is bad and wrong. You can see it in his language that he's defending blacks. It's a defensive strategy aimed at rectifying a negative stereotype and making excuses for blacks there versus whites, who he treats very cynically as cloaking and masking our privilege. So that's enough of the black and the white. I think black and white is interesting because it's the starkest contrast. But I think also that a lot of people fall into the trap of thinking that's what race is all about, is black and white. And it isn't really. It's a continuum. I've talked about this before. There are very subtle shades of difference. And perhaps the most subtle shade of difference is, and yet one of the most important, is the difference between whites and Jews. And there was a comment on the Heimbach, one of the Heimbach stories. I think it was the first one, when he first posted his proposition for a white student union, his call for it. This was a guy named Kevin who wrote, question, I am white, like really white, as in pretty much only from Western Europe. So naturally, I'd be allowed to join, right? However, I'm also Jewish. So does that nullify my entrance into the organization? You mentioned celebrating white culture, but you do not. But do you deny the monotheistic religion from whence you came? Let me know, Matty Bear. Sincerely, someone who already knows the answer. This is I mentioned this when I talked about people who insist that they're really, really white, and how that's a red flag. And here you can see it is indeed. Here's a guy who insists, makes a point of spelling white with a lowercase w. This is one of my own little bugbears. But he's discriminating enough to make sure that he spells Jewish with a capital J. And he's also quite confident in his Jewish identity. There's another Jew to cite here, and that is Richard Vatz, who resigned as the faculty advisor for the Youth for Western Civilization group that Heimbach had originally been the leader of. And Vatz, for whatever reason, had agreed to lead it, to advise it, to sponsor it, which is what you need to have an organization at the university. And they're going to need to find one for a white student union, too, and that's going to be problematic because nobody wants to come forward and do that. But the article here quotes Richard Vatz as saying, just because the name changes, the principles don't. Quote, when you have a group that calls themselves the White Student Union, their only purpose is generally hostility towards those who are non-white. But, you know, clearly the hostility at Townsend University and with identity politics in general is aimed at whites. It's not non-whites that are the target of the hostility here. Again, we have a guy who can discriminate between non-white and white without any problem. He's also inverting reality here. And we can simply turn his words around to understand what he's really saying here and what's really going on. And that would be to notice that when people oppose a white student union, their only purpose is hostility toward those who are white. People like Vatz try to justify non-white hostility toward whites by claiming that whites are the ones being hostile. But this Townsend example makes it clear that simply distinguishing ourselves from them, whites from non-whites, and attempting to organize to pursue our own interests is considered hostility by them. The inversion and the anti-white justification flies for the simple reason that it's everywhere, and it's coming from on high. This fellow Katz is a good example. He's in a position of authority at the university, and he's pronouncing, he's essentially condemning this white student union before it even exists. It turns out he's Jewish, of course. Found an article about him. A letter to the editor complaining of he had done an article on the subject of emerging Jewish political leaders that was published in the Baltimore Jewish Times, a news source dedicated to serving the Jewish community. The criticism was that he was not the least bit active in the local Jewish community, fraternal or synagogue life, that his track record of for serving as an alibi Jew, which I had never heard of, but this guy describes it as when someone is accused of anti-Semitism, an alibi Jew is brought in as a defense witness. So basically, Vatz was being accused here, in an unrelated thing, of being a bad Jew, of not being discriminating and hostile enough toward non-Jews. I'm going to talk more about Jews in some dedicated installments where I talk about their identity. But, you know, essentially they use religion as a mask, and they discriminate themselves and exclude others, especially whites. In the Townsend case, they only added their voices to the opposition. There weren't any Jews in support saying, as a Jew, I think whites ought to be allowed to organize. There was none of that. I didn't see any of it. Let me repeat some things and to drive them home. You know, noticing that there are those who aren't us, who don't identify as us, don't sympathize with us, who in fact harm us, that's called discrimination, and it's considered bad, but only when whites do it. And acting to separate and defend ourselves from those who aren't us, who don't identify as us, don't sympathize with us, and who in fact harm us, that's called exclusion. And that also is considered bad, but only when whites do it. And as I mentioned at the outset, whites need to pay closer attention and ask, good for who? It would obviously be good for whites to be more discriminating and to exclude people who are out to harm them, who don't sympathize with us. And it's good for non-whites if we don't. It's true. Whites are different from non-whites. We hear that even from non-whites. They insist that they're better, that they should be allowed and given more privileges than whites, even while they're pretending that we're the ones who get more or have done them wrong. You know, the difference between non-white identity and white identity, at least when they're living amongst us, is that non-whites prominently and maybe even primarily identify themselves as victims of whites. Whites are better than that. We don't identify ourselves as victims of non-whites. We're better at being white than anyone else. We're better at being who we are. We're the only ones who can be who we are. We're the only ones capable of making white babies. That's precious. Discrimination and exclusion are nothing more than recognizing the difference between us and them, recognizing that us is more important than them, and acting on that recognition. Failure to discriminate us from not us is bad for us. It leads to the dissolution of us, and it will ultimately destroy us. Our enemies demonstrate that they're enemies by trying to deny that to us. And they know it better than we do. And we're going to learn this lesson one way or another. It'll be better for us if that happens sooner rather than later. We have a weakness, like any group. We can only exist by discriminating us from them and excluding them.